Hey, and welcome back to The Edge Show. This episode is 126, I do believe. Yep. Yes, we are back from Barcelona.
It was nice. It was warm.
I'm not going to comment if it was nice or not. If you follow my Twitter feed, you'll understand why.
Yeah, but you had a little bit of a bug going on there.
A little bit of a bug going on, but you know, hey, we're back here full strength and all set to go. And we got some goodness for you lined up today in the episode following the break. But first off, let's take a look at some of the announcements that came out in the last little while. I think you're up first, right?
Yeah, probably the first one is the Office for Android news. We announced this last week. We put Office for Android out there onto the blogs to say that we are going to be releasing it in early 2015. Mm-hmm. Kind of cool. Lots of really nice bits in there. If you take a look at the Endpoint Zone that I recorded with Brad Anderson a couple of weeks ago, you'll actually see more details in there of the Office for Android announcement, including things like the fact that it's going to come natively instrumented so that you can manage it with Microsoft Intune. Very cool.
Very neat stuff. Other announcements that came in today was a little thing that happened to be called a renaming and merging of product lines known as Skype for Business. No longer is going to be known as Link. Link and Skype basically are coming together as one solution, phenomenal for a consumer perspective, but now also the enterprise management capabilities and everything that's available on the Link side as well should be available now in Skype for Business. It's looking like it's going to be sometime in the first half of 2015. It's going to be coming out. Mm-hmm. People are able to go off and to take a look at different options for what it's going to possibly look like. I mean, they got a great full screen experience for doing high def video conferencing with Skype for Business. It's going to be possible, but you're also still going to get the rich capabilities of being able to do desktop sharing, document sharing, other stuff like that. More info to come. They got a little bit of a brief introductory video there on the Link if you want to go take a look at it. Looks rather promising. I've always been a fan of Skype. I've always been a fan of the chat capabilities in Link inside the office and things like that. So both of best worlds coming together into one.
Yep. I think it's going to be super cool. Also, while we're still in the office space, MDM, capabilities in office. One of those things that people don't often realize is we have the largest, most popular form of MDM in the world in Exchange Active Sync. Mm-hmm. What we've announced is that we're going to be bringing some features of Windows Intune, sorry, Microsoft Intune, downstream into AES so that we can actually do a little bit more management natively through Office 365. It's not going to be a complete overlap with what we can do inside of Intune, but it'll be a few little extra things around remote wipe, all those kind of things, just to help you with your Office 365 deployments get a little bit more mobile device security in place. So kind of a cool announcement. Again, Brad and I go into a ton of detail on the Endpoint Zone show.
I was about to say, I think that's that was a little bit of what Julia White was showing, was she not?
Yeah,
during
when
the,
you were
TechEd keynotes?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a TechEd, you've got a TechEd session with Julia. Totally going to check that out as well.
We were talking about that one there, but she actually demoed it during the keynote piece
yes,
as well.
She did,
so
yeah.
Make sure you check out that's near the end of the 2.5 hour to 3 hour keynote, in case you're interested. I don't know about you, but personally, my inbox gets a bit unruly.
I have been known to have a couple of 100 unread emails at any one point in time.
Well, we've offered up a new service for Office 365 subscribers, which is called, I want to say, Clutter Experience.
Yep.
The Clutter Experience is basically the ability to go through using some of our technologies and power of what's known as Office Graph into your inbox, where it goes through and actually monitors what you're doing to your inbox through a variety of endpoints. So not just only through the web interface, but also how you parse your messages using your phone, your Outlook client, your mail client, however you interact with your Office 365 mailbox. It'll go ahead and start to look at the stuff that you're looking at and keep things that are important to you inside your inbox, and then move other stuff to a folder called Clutter.
Yeah.
And then you can obviously go back and revisit those information, so it's not like it's lost or deleted anywhere. But you can also go through and flag specific items so that to not be automatically clutterfied, if you will, and moved off to the side. That's not the official term, by the way. I just made that one up. But the Office team is going through and kind of showing a little bit of example of what the Clutter option is. You'll basically be able to see it through the web interface. It's off by default, but if you sign on to your Office 365 mailbox through the web interface, through OWA, you're able to go and turn on the Clutter option, and it will go off and start to do things. Don't think it's going to happen immediately. It does take some time with machine learning to understand how you process your messages, and then you'll start to notice things moving over to the Clutter folder. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be super useful. Actually, one of those things I can't wait to go and actually turn on is that capability. It might actually allow me to get back on top of my emails after TechEd.
Definitely.
Which have kind of gone a little bit insane. Next up, we have news on Skype Translator. Last week, whilst we were at TechEd, they released a sign-up page so that you can go and sign up, so you can get early access to the preview when it becomes available. Skype Translator, if you've not seen it, super cool technology. It means that you can talk like this, like I am doing now, in real time, over Skype, and Skype will just automatically translate all of that for you. So it becomes this really natural conversation, really good for interacting and working with people all over the world without having to have some translator in the background doing that work for you. Kind of cool.
This is available for both Windows 8.1 computers and tablets only for the preview release. Mm-hmm. It's also a limited number of languages. I don't know if they have UK English included to US English.
Yeah, but that would be kind of useful. I'm kind of getting to the stage where I need the translation now. It's getting pretty tough.
Or even Canadian to US English as well. So we'll have to see what languages are included with that particular initial thing. Have you signed up for it? Are you going to try it out?
You know what? I actually have signed up for it, and I'm hopefully just waiting on my invite to come in.
So there's no special front-of-the-line privileges just because we happen to work for Microsoft.
No, I'm pretty sure if we went around to the right office and knocked on the door.
Knocked on the door.
Yeah, we can get a demo.
It might actually work. Yeah. You never know. That's it for the news episodes announcements for today. But after the break, we actually decided to dig this one out of the archives-ish. Mm-hmm. It's not really the archives.
It's
basically
last week.
It's you know, last week at TechEd Europe, I managed to sit down with a program group manager or partner group manager, Corey Sanders, to talk about all the new things that are happening in the Azure space and Azure IaaS space. Mm-hmm. Some of the new announcements that took place during TechEd Europe. I think that it's a really good interview to be able to go and see what's going on, and so I decided that I would simply cut this one in and add it in, even though it took place live during the wee morning hours, if you happen to catch it here in North America, or caught on the replay. So check that one out after the break. We're here at the Shireline Live stage down in the main exhibit hall just in front of it. You actually have to walk past us to go to lunch. My name is Rick Claus, Senior Technical Evangelist, and I'm here talking with... a firecracker, how's that?
A firecracker.
Last time...
What are you, like 80?
What is this? You had me completely in a tizzy thinking that I had leaked a secret location of some kind of Azure data center.
In Redmond, right?
In Redmond.
You had announced the Redmond data center,
right,
which doesn't exist.
Does not exist.
Good.
But we did get an email from the gentleman that does run that data center.
Yeah.
And he said, don't worry, guys.
No problem.
It's just, you know, it's just not a real full-fledged massive 16 football field data center.
That's right.
That's right. Out there because those
you
are definitely
you really good. Embarrassed yourself the last time.
I know. So I'm going to try to hold it together for
it
at least 30
minutes.
It was
lucky that I was here to make that one go smoothly.
To cover some stuff.
That's
so
right.
I noticed that you were over there on the side watching your CTO, Mr. Rusinovich, up here talking about some sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. We should probably introduce who you are. So
I'd love that.
Who are you, by the way, dude?
Well. My name is Corey Sanders. I am a group program manager responsible for the infrastructure as a service workload in Azure. And just really general good guy as well. So where am I looking here?
Just so you know, those two cameras right there are live.
Okay,
and
good.
You don't know which one is being used because they don't have the red lights.
My eye always goes straight to my own person.
You got it. So that's perfect, man.
It's like a mirror.
You can't do one of those look at the camera longingly and then do like in a heartfelt
I'm always impressed with how I look, so I want to look at myself.
There you go.
There he is.
Perfect. I'll try to keep my hands out of the frame for that one there.
Okay.
But there were some very nice nuggets of IaaS stuff of Azure stuff in general in today's keynote that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also here talking about some sessions with regards to things that didn't make it into the keynote.
That's right.
So I thought, why don't we just go through a little bit of a laundry list of some things.
I'd love to.
And the first one I'm going to hit you up on, which I don't know if it's in the proper order, because you don't really have an order to work with.
No.
Is these new machine types.
Yeah.
D-Series and the G-Series.
Yeah.
So talk to me about those.
Yeah. So... you know, for a while we've had the A series, and we've had A through A7, and so those include both the general compute ones, but they also include. Hold on, where am I looking here?
Right there.
Perfect. Those have both the standard, sort of the general purpose SKUs, and then also the high memory ones. And then we have A and A9, which are actually HPC geared SKUs. So they end up having InfiniBand RDMA connections to it, and allow you to do a lot of sort of the HPC like workloads. And then we recently announced, actually just like a month and a half ago, we announced the D series, which ends up going to higher memory, up to 112 gig of memory.
Right.
And they also have local SSDs attached, right? So you can use that local SSD for any sort of cache that you may want for SQL if you're using buffer pool work. So it really helps speed up a lot of those workloads. And then the most recent launch, of course, is the G series, which we've announced. We haven't launched yet,
right,
to be clear. And those go up to a whopping 448. I mean, 448 gig of memory.
Right.
So they really are monsters. And that's the most recent size. So we run the full range now of whatever you may need to do.
So what is the most intricate part besides memory and scale between the D and the G for someone looking at workloads to run these on?
Yeah, so top memory and then also the proportion of local SSD is a lot higher on G.
Right.
So you can actually do, there's obviously a lot bigger cache, a lot bigger usage case there for being able to deploy data workloads, for example. A great MongoDB type workload could run on there, so a lot more local SSD. Yeah.
And the one thing that I came across is the fact that the D size, or the D series, has that non-persistent disk. Right.
That's right, yeah, that local disk.
So
yeah,
if that guy has to reboot for maintenance reasons or something along those lines, basically you don't know that disk is not guaranteed to be there.
That's right.
Is not the case for the Gs, correct?
So
the Gs,
so
you can attach disk in
for
with
both,
the premium storage offer.
Yeah,
to
so
be able
for
to get
both
stuff.
D and G, you'll be able to attach premium storage to it.
Oh, okay, I didn't
know
that.
Yeah, so how it'll end up actually working is for both D and G, you'll be able to attach premium storage to it or actually standard storage to it. And when you attach premium storage, we'll actually take those local SSDs and turn them into a host-level cache.
Oh, okay.
So we'll actually speed up, and that's how you get sort of the less than 1 millisecond read, because we'll put that into that local cache. It's going to be pretty speedy.
Can you do that with the A's too, or not?
The A's, no, because the local cache is going to require the SSDs,
okay,
because it needs to be supremo fast.
Okay,
that's actually a technical term, supremo fast.
Supremo fast. Now,
right,
these are not available in all regions because it is like a phased approach to be able to bring these in.
The D series is available in all regions.
Oh, it is.
Actually, yeah.
Okay.
But the G series will not be. It'll be a phased approach. Yeah. So, if you're interested in the G series, actually, there is a link for you to go in and say, hey, I would like the G series. It gives us a sense of who we think is going to use it. And so you can actually get to it by going to the blog post announcing it. There's a link in there. So go click on that, fill it in, and say, oh, I want the G series.
I thought that was Canis's blog post talking about the G series.
His has it as
and
well.
Then, yep. And then the link there basically says, would you use these in your area?
That's right.
It's great for capacity planning.
It is, so exactly. Give us a little hint.
So we talked about the premium storage. Premium storage is not available right now.
No, correct.
It's not available in preview.
That's right.
At this point in time.
That's right.
And
you saw the internal, though.
I saw the internal stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't want to know anything you're not supposed to tell us.
No,
about
I'm not going to tell you anything.
Like
don't worry.
But the idea is that will be available at some point in the future, and
that's
you
right,
can attach it up, the D or the G.
That's right.
And then be able to use it that kind of way.
Yeah.
And that really, as Mark was saying, that really is simply a blob in Azure that has the more performant disk associated with it that then goes in and can be attached up to disks and
exactly,
then be able to be used.
Exactly, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, and it's great. I mean, we're testing it internally right now. You know, you saw it on stage, and that was, you know, it was a real thing running there on stage. And we've got a lot of the internal workloads, right? So SQL guys are testing, Dynamics guys are testing. So,
right,
yeah, it's great. It's great.
Now, you also had something that came up that Mark showed, which is rather interesting. The whole concept of the Azure batch now in preview, and that is the ability to go through and have batch running up on the system that's different than Azure Automation.
Yeah.
Talk to me about batch.
Yeah. So, I mean, batch.
Hope you didn't break that chair.
You're good. Something fell. We're good.
Good.
Everything's good, everyone.
I think the mic pack dropped.
Yeah, the mic dropped.
Good.
So as long as you can still hear me, that's the most important part. So Azure Batch is a great new service. We launched the preview. The cool thing about Azure Batch is, you know, we've been actually doing this internally for a while. So, you know, the media services, which we've had out there for a while, is actually built on top of our Azure Batch service.
Oh, okay, I didn't know
and
that.
So we've actually, it's sort of been an internal service for a while to help our internal solutions build on top and sort of not have to manage the scale. And so really the key part of it is it's all about sort of scheduling as a service or job scheduling as a service.
Yeah.
And so it basically utilizes and optimizes your virtual machine usage in sort of the most optimal way, I guess. And so the key thing here is when you basically spin up a pool of virtual machines, it'll go take those jobs and sort of pack them in based on the usage of those virtual machines and sort of use processes on those boxes to be able to optimize it, which makes you be able to sort of utilize those virtual machines in the best way possible. And also it will automatically scale up and down to reduce your costs. And so media's been using it for a while. We just productized it. And that's kind of what this launch was here with the help of the Green Button acquisition that we had earlier this year, which has a great set of APIs and a great experience, which you saw on stage today, sitting on top of that underlying system. And so now we sort of have that full end-to-end experience that we've been able to make available to people like you.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Speaking of fast disk and massive scale, we started talking about networking and started talking about scale and networking side of things. ExpressRoute comes to mind.
Yeah.
There are some new announcements that happened today as well, or some things that are going on?
We've jumped from 9 to 11 partners.
Explain what that means.
So ExpressRoute. ExpressRoute's a great technology that we've got that really enables sort of an easy hybrid connectivity. It's a set of either carrier hotels, like Equinix, or a set of telcos. British Telecom, BT, and Orange were both listed on the slide today as important partners that we've enabled as part of ExpressRoute. And so really exciting stuff. It makes it super easy for you to just go in and sort of connect in directly into Azure with very high throughput, very, very sort of protected lines instead of sort of going through that public internet pipe. And it gives you sort of a lot of ease in setting up your hybrid connectivities, which is great.
So the basic premise of this is that you are having, if you already have a relationship with one of those carriers,
that's right,
potentially you'll be able to go in and establish an ExpressRoute connection from your on-premises environment.
That's exactly
through
right.
Through their data center.
That's exactly right.
Connecting up to
right.
the Azure data center.
That's right. That's right.
And then
that's right.
Basically lit up some European ones now.
That's right. That's right. And it's it just simplifies the whole hybrid story. You know, it makes it really easy for workloads to go both directions, right? And this is one of the things that we really are excited about when it comes to sort of the hybrid promise when it comes to Azure, is it's not just a question of moving things into Azure, right? It's really a question of creating a great experience that goes both ways, whether it be sort of the connected services, the things that you saw today, or whether it be moving workloads one way or the other. You know, we've seen, of course, a lot of workloads that move from on-premise into Azure, but we've also seen a lot of examples where people dev test in Azure and then move their production on-premise. It's great, right? No problem. And we want to make sure that that's easy and really seamless.
Very cool. Laundry list continues. We have Azure Automation. Before we talk about Azure Automation, I do want to remind you, if you're interested, on channel9.msdn.com, you are able to go ahead and submit your questions for Corey Sanders to answer. Just go ahead, put your information in there, put in a Twitter handle if you wanted to, and ask away
if you want.
So Azure Automation.
Yes.
It's in GA now.
Yes, it is.
Now, this is different than the Azure Automation Gallery, which also went in the GA a little while ago. But talk to me about that.
Yeah, so Azure Automation is really, really cool, actually. So it's built on built on PowerShell.
Right.
And so what it ends up doing is it allows you to run a set of PowerShell commands from a service that's running in the cloud. Right. So the cloud will spin up sort of a small processor that's going to run this PowerShell script. And it really simplifies a lot of sort of, again, automation, hence the name, very clever name. It allows you to sort of simplify a lot of that automation that you'd run on anything running in Azure, right? And so great example that that I'll actually show later today in my session, we see a lot of people using it for cost control, right? And so you'll end up saying, look, I want to shut down my virtual machine, or I want to, you know, offload all my data every Friday at 5 p.m. With this service, you can go in and set up this PowerShell script that'll do, you know, very simple or very complex operations inside the VM or against the VM or against the website or, you know, whatever it may be, leveraging sort of the PowerShell of Azure, and control it in that way. And then you can set up this schedule. And so 5 p.m., I want to, you know, clean up all the data on my dev box and shut it down and make sure it doesn't run over the weekend.
And therefore, you're not being billed on it, right?
Exactly. Very simple solution that's a great advantage of both using the agility of the cloud and then that automation service, make sure that you use it in the sort of most appropriate way. It's really cool. I started using it a lot for a lot of things, setting up demos even. It's very easy to just go in and say, hey, clean up and reset my demo.
Clean up an aisle 3.
I have an aisle 3 PowerShell script in automation.
Nice. Well, now I got to start thinking about how I can use that too, because I never even thought about the fact that I could have an entire demo environment that I remote into to be able to do things. No one knows where you're remoting into when you're doing your demos mostly. And I would be able to simply say, spin this guy up first when he's got a heartbeat, then off this guy,
yep.
Do the following stuff, and then shut him down again too.
And you, I mean, I'm sure you leave them around. You probably are wasting a lot of the company's money. So.
Well, it's currently all fitting within my MSDN benefit, actually.
I see.
Because it just, you know, stops.
Because that's such a benevolent benefit.
You got it.
It's wonderful.
Works. Yes. It absolutely works, man.
Yeah.
I don't have access to these special accounts that you guys all have access to all these massive G-series and proprietary storage and all that sort of stuff.
It turns out my account actually was grandfathered in because I've been in the team so long that it actually doesn't get any billing right now. So
you want
me to deploy something, give me a call.
It's the Recinovich class subscription is what you're
saying. Actually, yeah, he doesn't have one of those. So
he's new enrolled.
Well, we don't trust him. It's
nice.
He'll just write books on it or something. I don't know.
Nice. This is something that actually our good friend Jeff Woolsey demonstrated. Operational insights.
A good friend of yours. So, let's just be clear.
You don't know.
There's
animosity between you two.
No. Woolsey and I are good. Yeah.
The on-premises guy, the cloud guy.
If you had said Snowver, we'd have a different conversation.
There'd be words. talk to me now about this concept of operational insights. He was explaining it as being a agent you install on your on-premises servers.
Yeah.
And once it's been installed on your on-premises servers, it goes in and establishes a connection up to your subscription.
That's right.
Loads up a bunch of data up inside the subscription.
Yeah.
And then the magic of Azure analysis of all the sort of stuff that's going on in there.
It is magic.
Shows you this phenomenal freaking dashboard.
Yeah. It's totally cool. So, yeah, I mean, you pretty much covered it. I mean, I think that it effectively takes a very simple agent install process on your machines on-premises and then can do this complex analysis. And then the experience is really magnificent, right? I think
it looks very similar to what I would call the new portal.
That's right.
Where you basically can put different... is there a name for it? Is it called New Portal?
It's called the Preview Portal.
Preview Portal. You know, we're not going to keep it in preview forever.
That's
eventually,
right.
It's not going to be.
Then it's just the portal.
And then it gets a name.
And then it's just the portal. And then the other one's the old portal.
I'm holding you to that.
That's right.
So in the sense that it's completely customizable, the stuff that I care about, storage, let's say, is different than someone else going to care about, which is memory and virtualization, perhaps.
That's right, yeah. The cool thing about it, actually, and I will say, because I always like to bring it back to my service, because that's what matters is me.
Of course. You and the team.
And I'm looking at myself in the camera thinking about this.
See team members around here, too. They're supporting you.
That's right. But it's more me. Than,
okay.
Anyway. The cool thing, actually, where we're heading down here is that agent that's, okay, great, you just install the agent, and you can install that agent on your boxes on-premises. But with Azure, actually, what we're going to do, using our extension technology, you're actually going to be able to just click a button in the portal and say, install that agent as I deploy my VMs. And then you'll never have to log onto the box. It'll immediately start doing this logging. We actually are going to have that for PowerShell here in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
The portal will come soon.
But you're talking about not your VMs that are on-premises. You're talking about the VMs that are in Azure.
In Azure now.
So
can
you
also
can include
use operation
those as well.
Insets, of course.
I never even thought of that.
Oh, well, of course.
Of course.
Why would you not?
So
you can always include your VMs in Azure here.
It's
Come
just
on.
A VM. It's just another
just
location where it's running, right?
It's just a VM, but it's easier to get that agent inside. So now the step that's really easy, which is install an agent, is even easier in Azure. And that's what I like to do.
Nice. Yeah. So I'm assuming that kind of ties in from an insight. You mentioned the word extension.
I did.
So let's talk a little bit about extensions.
Okay.
So first of all, what is an extension, for those of us that don't know?
Yeah.
And what's different and new about some of the extensions that we're announcing this week?
Excellent. So the concept of an extension is, you know, one of the things that we've noticed a lot as we sort of look at the platform as a service offering that we have in cloud services and what we look at sort of infrastructure as a service is that there's sort of this interim ground where, you know, you want to be able to have the control and the persistent state that an infrastructure service VM has. But you still sort of want that automated setup. You want that easy configuration to deploy and perhaps automated security. And so we looked at that and we sort of said, gosh, I wonder if there's a way for us to sort of combine these two. And we took some of the technology that we built as part of our cloud services and brought it on back into infrastructure as a service. And we call this extensions. And what this does is there's a very, very thin agent that sits inside the virtual machine. And when you boot this guy up, this agent starts up and he starts listening. Right, and he starts listening to the platform. And at any point, it doesn't even need to be just at startup, but at any point you can go in and say, put this extension in, and it pulls from a curated list. It's basically a gallery that sits inside of the Azure space and will pull from it, and it can pull things like first-party solutions, whether it be PowerShell, whether it be DSC, take parameters in and run them. So at any point you can say, run this PowerShell script inside my VM, right, without opening up any ports, and it'll go and run it, right? And you can go grab logs that way and so on. But you can also do third-party things, right? And so the ability to go in there and deploy, you can actually deploy Semantic, you can deploy Trend inside there.
And these vendors have to make those extensions.
They do. They work with us, right? Okay. And so they work with us us and they take these extensions and put them into our gallery.
It's not just like
gallery.
A silent install.
No, right, right.
MSI/S or something like that.
That's right, that's right. Well, I mean, it could be, I don't know, right? It depends what they're doing there.
Okay.
And so you can go ahead and drop those in there. And it's really great. It allows, we'll be announcing McAfee as well as part of this, and Cloud Link as well, to be able to drop these third-party solutions, mostly security right now, right inside that virtual machine and run them. Which is great because, again, these agents now are within the firewall. And so you don't have to worry about sort of reaching out and getting your content and copying it in. And is it protected? Is it trusted? Is it the latest from that vendor? You know, no, we take care of all that for you. We just bring it in for you, drop it on the machine, and run it. It's really one of sort of the cooler parts, I think, of virtual machines, and we continue to grow on this.
And I'm assuming, obviously, when you deploy new machines through the portal or through via PowerShell, you can have the extensions added in.
That's right, so and even after when. You deploy them,
yeah.
You can go in and add them.
Oh.
And so two more that we've added, actually, that I'll should be showing later today and we'll be demoing this week, as well as two release management solutions. So both Octopus, which is a release management solution built on .NET, and Visual Studio Release Manager will both be effectively announced today. I'm announcing them right now.
There you go. You heard it here first, folks.
Announcing. You heard it here first. Octopus ended up being sort of the second highest voted item on our user voice,
right.
Which you should check out, by the way. It's the Azure user voice. Go in. We do read it. You'll see my answers to many of the questions on IS. But it was the second most voted question. And we just we went ahead and did it. And so here we are with Octopus support announcing today.
Wow. Now, the Visual Studio, Design State Control.
Release management as well.
Management stuff.
Yep, will also be available. Yep, that's right.
Okay, that's interesting. I actually had never, I'm not from a dev background, so I never even heard what Octopus was.
It's DevOps, man.
It is. It's enabled. It's just a click button and you're in.
You just go. You just go.
Now, I'm assuming that it is... that you work with different vendors, so if vendors are interested in making these things, they can contact somebody there to be
That's
able
right.
to go off and to be part of the program
That's right.
sort of
That's
stuff.
That's right. Yeah, as of right now, actually, it's mostly my team that works with the partners. And all of the partners I just met have been fantastic to work with. It's been a real blast, actually. I love the partnership relationships that we continue to build. In fact, the whole marketplace that we announced today has been partners that we've worked with, both in my team and some of the other teams in the marketplace team and the portal team have worked pretty closely to bring them in, work with them, make sure their solutions worked. All of them, whether it be Linux distributions, whether it be CoreOS, which we announced, whether it be additional security solutions, whether it be operation solutions, configuration solutions, yeah, they're all in there, and they're all pleasurable to work with.
You said Linux distributions as well?
Yeah.
They also can have extensions? It's not just a Microsoft thing?
That's a great question, yeah. And so we recently added the extension technology into Linux as well. And so you can go in. Actually, our Linux agent goes in and can pull these down. And so some similar ones, like Chef, for example, is supported on both Windows and Linux. We also support some of our first-party ones, custom scripts. So you can run custom scripts in both. And you can actually reset the password in both. One of the more common requested... common run extensions, actually, is go reset my password. And so you can go into the virtual machine and say, my password, I don't remember it. Can you reset it? It's one of those things that you're sort of like, man, I wish I had this on-premises, too.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And so we make that available.
Nice.
So.
And now, something that came up a lot on discussions when I was talking with some customers about using Azure IaaS instances for certain ones of their labs or their workloads that they're doing up in the cloud.
Yeah.
Was the inability to have more than one NIC.
Uh-huh.
And now that is available as another
option,
too?
I'm glad you asked. Yeah.
Because we now have a solution for
this.
Yeah,
we actually are another announcement that didn't actually make it into the keynote is we are offering multi-NIC as of today. And actually, we're starting that release in Europe. And then we'll be taking it actually to the rest of the world as we deploy it out. So we decided to start in Europe since we're here. And so you'll actually see that there's a networking session. I mentioned it in my session, but there's a networking session later this week. You should definitely go see it and watch it. There'll be a big focus on this, this and actually a few others, Ackling, more control on the network as well, which is going to be pretty exciting stuff.
Ackling on the network itself?
Yeah.
So not just endpoints you have to open up for the outside.
Being able to control the security groups on top of all the different layers of your network, whether it be VM or subnet, you can actually lock this all down. And so that's also being announced today, including forced tunneling. So being able to actually force the traffic to go through your your private network instead of going through the internet. And so all these things, again, I recommend you go to the networking session if these things are like, yes, I love those. Definitely go to that networking session. They're going to demo it. It's going to be great. And those are all, again, starting here in Europe, and we'll take it out from there. But they're pretty exciting features that we didn't highlight in the keynote, but we will be showing off here in the sessions throughout the week.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, Mark was very passionate around this thing called Docker.
He should
be. What's your take on the concept of what Docker is?
Yeah.
Just in case people missed that interview with Mark.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the way Mark described it is pretty good. I think, the way I sort of look at it is it ends up being, it's an orchestration API that's actually very, very popular. It's a great, great technology that effectively can sit on top of, at this point now, really any container technology, right? And so, as we recently announced, we're going to be building Windows container technology that then Docker will be able to orchestrate on top of. And then, of course, on Linux, which is what it runs on today, whether it be sort of LXC containers or other containers as well, you can end up sort of running this Docker API on top. And so the cool thing about this is that it effectively creates sort of a unified experience for being able to deploy this container technology, right? And so you end up having that same API that spans any environment, right? And so it means on your local box, you can do development there, then you can go test somewhere, and then you can go actually take it into production, and you're confident that it's going to be the same exact experience in all three. A great example of this, even working through this demo with Mark that he did on stage that sort of showed off ability to deploy sort of a Docker container, it was sort of the easiest demo to reset, right? It's one of these sort of funny things that as you sort of work through demos and you sort of live through this keynote experience, some demos are really, really easy to reset, and some are really painful because they take a lot of sort of finagling to get right.
Yeah.
And Docker is so easy to reset. You just delete and redeploy, and it's that exact same experience each time. So throw in the Docker Hub on top, where you can sort of grab this big, huge repository, 45,000.
Wow.
Yes, unbelievable.
The community's that large for the stuff that they make?
It's fantastic. Yeah, it's great. And sort of bringing Windows to that is going to be awesome. So this huge community with Docker Hub sort of hosting all those that then the way that they wanted it to be deployed is exactly what you'll see when you deploy it. A lot of work still to be done with the Docker guys, who have been fantastic to work with, working out sort of their orchestration, their open orchestration API. It's going to put multiple containers together. So there's a lot of great work still coming. It's been a blast, and it's been really fun. And as you saw, the Docker client on Windows today, that's awesome. That was finished on Friday.
Just by the skin of the teeth.
It's the agility of the cloud. It's sort of like, wow, the very last minute we got it working, and we told Mark, hey, demo this on Windows now. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
It's fun stuff. Yeah, so it's been great.
Mike has a question.
Uh-oh.
It's a long one. You both talk about running demo environments in Azure. Are there Azure subscriptions geared towards an IT pro who wants to run a demo lab? Looking quickly at the pricing calculator, it looks as though it would be far too expensive. It's an interesting question.
I can start with MSDN. I mean, MSDN is one way to go.
MSDN is one way to go for sure.
Yeah, so...
you have different amount of credits available.
That's right. So MSDN has a bunch of different options for it with different amounts of credits, 50, 100, 150.
Right.
Right, for what's the lowest level of MSDN?
I don't know. Don't ask me.
Professional and premium.
Standard, premium, and ultimate or something like that.
I think that's right. Yeah. So yeah, there's three tiers, 50, 100, 150. And it gives you sort of a certain amount of free usage. And that's all of Azure. That's not just virtual machines. But the cool thing about it, actually, is it's MSDN pricing. And so when you're running under your MSDN account, your Windows prices are reduced down by almost 33%, I believe. And then your all of your application licenses are also effectively waived, right? So SQL and BizTalk are effectively free licenses when you're running in a sort of a test environment or a dev environment. And so it really reduces the price of that usage. Even if you go above the $150, it allows you to sort of run for a much cheaper, a much higher value than you'd normally run for.
And don't forget, there's other ways people can get access to this. And the first way is obviously just to go off and do a trial.
Right.
You do a trial for 30 days, and you're able to have $200 credit or something like that. To be able to try it out, whichever gets exhausted first. But the big thing is really the mind shift of people realizing that you're only paying while the thing is running.
That's right.
If it's not running, you're not actually paying for it.
Yeah.
So if you're going to spin up, I don't even know if you have enough cores to spin up like a G-Series Mondo super massive system and have it run for very long.
It'd be hard.
But I know you can definitely, I get away with running a lot of the A1s, 2s, and 3s very quickly and easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
And standard to be able to go off and do some labs and some demos. And then as long as I have that stuff built, it's now saved, I can then shut it off. I can take an image of it and capture the image. I can put it in my own gallery. I can deploy it again.
That's right.
So there definitely are some creative ways of doing it. But it is still cheaper than going off and provisioning new hardware, bringing it inside your environment, spinning it up, being able to do it for the amount of money that you got inside
of it. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think
it's a mindset change.
Actually, the lab is one of the better, even outside of the MSDN offer, the lab is one of the better usage cases that we've found for using Azure, simply because you shut it off at 5 p.m. or 4 p.m., wherever the lab day is done, you shut it down and restart it. And so you're not worried about, you know, when you pay to bring in hardware or you pay to use hardware, you can't just stop paying at 4 p.m., right? You end up typically having to pay for the whole time.
Right.
And so that is one of the nicer aspects that Labs is one of the better examples for it.
Another thing you can take a look at is if you have people inside your organization that have the MSDN licenses that aren't currently activated because there's multiple developers, they are able to go in and they can add your account in as an admin to be able to go off and to use those resources to be able to for test and lab environments. Likewise as well, potentially your company's already purchased Azure on the enterprise portal, and you just haven't been given access to it yet.
That's right.
Be careful with that one, because that's actually going against like real billing.
Real dollars.
And real dollars.
Real dollars.
So be careful with that one there. We're running close to being out of time, I do believe. I don't know if my timer is accurate in the top corner anymore. Someone can reach into the microphone and tell me how much time you got left. I think my clock got about 2-3 minutes. Talk about RBAC.
I mean, I'll talk forever.
Oh, I know, but I got to keep you on track, man, because I don't even know who's up after you.
You got to kick me off stage? You're going to have to drag me off this stage.
I've got 15 more minutes. Oh, we have lots of time, man. So, talk about RBAC. RBAC,
I'm sorry, I was distracted. Joey's waving at me.
Nice.
Hey, Joe. Hey. Okay.
We are live, right?
We are. Oh,
just so you know.
Oh, I thought this was recorded. Editing this?
This is live.
Oh, this is live.
It's one take. It's a one take wonder.
All right. Roll it again, please.
Yep.
Okay. RBAC. Okay. So RBAC stands for Role-Based Access Control.
Right.
And so this was recently announced, and it ties into our Azure Active Directory. So what's really cool about this, if you played with Azure Active Directory, it's basically an identity system in the cloud, right? And what it can do is it can actually replicate with your on-premises Active Directory. And so it takes those same identities and can actually replicate between them. And so with that, now add on top of that role-based access control, and what we've enabled here is sort of this read-only mode, right? And so what the biggest thing here is, one of the biggest requests we've heard is, hey, you know, I want to be able to monitor the health of my system, but I don't want necessarily to be able to make changes, or I don't want that guy to be able to make, it's always about that guy.
Right.
I don't want that guy to be able to make changes because he'll screw it up. And so you want to be able to give him read-only access and be able to sort of take a look at the system, but yet not have access. And so with the most recent changes and support for RBAC, you now can say, this user gets read-only, this user gets read-write, and allows you to give a little bit more control there and be able to sort of lock it down. And so it's an important aspect of that new portal experience that we've offered, the preview portal.
Preview.
No, I'm sorry, the new portal.
New portal. Mm-hmm.
Good.
New portal.
Good. We've got this down.
We do.
Good. We'll fix all that in editing before this goes live.
Yeah, we'll just do that one.
We'll fix all that in editing.
Don't forget, you can ask any questions you want to the group program manager for Infrastructure as a Service in Azure.
This is your chance.
Chantline.msdn.com. Corey Sanders is here, available to answer your questions. How about something that is more of a personal question for you?
Here we go.
Around, like any father, they have their favorite child, even though we don't say that we have a favorite child. So what is your favorite feature, functionality inside the Azure IS?
I thought you were going to say coworker.
No, not
Mark
coworker.
Marcinovich. Oh, no. Let's see here.
What do you think? What do you think is your most favorite new thing? I mean, doesn't have to be new, but we've released a bunch of new stuff, so I'm assuming new is going to be easier.
You know what's actually really, really cool that I got super excited about, and I didn't even know we were doing? I love extensions. I think I made that pretty clear. I love them. With the new anti-malware, which just recently went to generally available, in the new portal, in the preview portal, you can actually go in and add the Microsoft anti-malware. And when you add it, a little panel flies out, right? And so so you can put additional options in. And if you look at this panel, it looks like you're just on the desktop making changes to your anti-malware solution. It's like files to exclude, files to scan, scan times, frequency of scanning, you know, quick scan, run now. And it's just like, oh my goodness, I'm managing my virtual machine directly from this portal experience. And for me, I love the extension model because I feel like it's opened up this world of truly being able to manage without having to be on the box, which allows a lot more scale out, allows a lot more sort of broad control. And this was the first time I sort of felt like it's coming to life with this anti-malware experience that gives such granular control over your settings and configurations, right? And so, you know, with that, it sort of opens up for me a lot of the possibility of what this world could look like, where you're pretty much managing hundreds of thousands of virtual machines from this portal experience, all with a few clicks, and completely controlling security, configuration, setup, backup, everything you want to do, all from that prompt. Again, merging that sort of PaaS and IaaS experience together to make sort of this single unified virtual machine computing experience. And so, to me, that was my favorite sort of new feature that's flown under the radar, more or less, right? That I feel like has really shown the potential and power that we've got. So, I love it.
Now, you obviously been talking an awful lot about the extension side of things. One thing we didn't talk about just yet is the VM gallery that we have, right?
Yes.
Now, this VM gallery is basically pre-configured images of different configurations,
from
different vendors and different things.
Don't ask me for my favorite vendor.
No, I'm not going to ask you the favorite vendor because that's going to open up some kind of LCA discussion. I don't want to do that at all.
I will not.
So what I'm going to ask you is, how is something like that different than the extension model? Like, is it more, it's obviously a lot more thick and heavy, a lot more change
thick
control
and heavy,
can't happen or something like that? Like, why would I, as a partner,
I'm sure a lot of partners would say, it's thick and heavy, definitely. I want to use that. No. It's, you know, I think, it really depends on the application that you're using, right? And so there are plenty of applications that are either deeply embedded within the OS, actually have changes in the OS. So there's a bunch of these new solutions that we've launched as part of the marketplace that are really Linux appliances. And they've actually made changes inside the Linux kernel or the Linux operating system to be able to go support it in the most efficient way as part of their appliance. And so, either deeply embedded, they have an extremely long install time, and so you may want to get that ahead of time, or you have configuration that you want to go land as part of install. And so it really sort of is two different models for application. Obviously, anti-malware solutions like Trend, Symantec, McAfee, those are add-on solutions to another solution that you've already deployed. Extensions make a ton of sense there, right? But when you're talking about SQL Server, SharePoint, you're talking about Oracle images, right? Those are actually going to be pre-installed so that they're very easy to get going. You know, Barracuda solution for their their firewall, right? Those are embedded inside the OS and they're sort of deeply integrated. So all those end up being more geared towards an appliance type experience, right? Where it's sort of the full OS plus application all sort of intertwined versus adding it on top as an extension. And so there's a place for both. I think we're going to see both of them blossom into very rich ecosystems, and they're going to be different ecosystems.
Right.
And sometimes some companies will have both. And so you'll end up seeing a lot of that sort of grow out of those experiences.
So you're not going to see something like a SharePoint extension, because it's obviously deeply integrated, it's very complex, and you got some of the setups
you have to worry about. Probably not. Yeah, I mean, I think you could imagine if you wanted to deal with that install, you could conceivably do it, but I suspect that would not be the type that we'd put as an extension. Yeah.
Right. Very cool. Don't forget, you can ask any questions you want at channel9.msdn.com. We are still live.
We've got tons of time.
We still have tons of time, man.
Do we? I thought we were...
I'm looking at my watch. You know, we still got about 10 minutes or so.
Well, it's so riveting. I mean, they're just like, you guys should just keep going.
Did we miss anything? You know, like, we went through a big list of stuff. Like, is there a scenario that you can see that this kind of lights up now that didn't happen before to kind of put a bunch of these things together? I mean, we talked, I know Mr. Zander talked briefly about, obviously, Azure Site Recovery.
Yeah.
It's something he's very interested
as
well.
That's right.
Has any of this changed how ASR is now working at all? Or
no,
is
ASR
still the same thing?
Well, you know what? ASR will... ASR's got a really bright future. I actually love the product.
That's GA now, right?
Yes. So, but the key thing about the ASR, that all the things that I just mentioned that will get better and better with ASR... you know, one of the nice things about working with the site recovery guys is they give us a lot of feedback over things that we need to think about when we're building a solution that takes lift and shift applications, right? Because they're basically the best example of lift and shift you've ever seen is a DR failover,
right?
Because it actually has to be identical, right? Or you failed. And so, you know, one of the things are things that we're looking, even things like premium storage, things like these larger VM sizes, right? If you're running a VM or even a physical machine on premises that you've got that's really, really big, right? It's got a lot of memory. We may not be able to support that today. And so without the larger sizes, without the G-Series, without the premium storage and the faster disk speed, you fail over and you may see kind of a drop in experience, right? And so suddenly you're, you know, okay, great, you have a disaster and SQL Server now, right, can't run. And so these new things that are going to allow bigger sizes, bigger, faster speeds, it'll give more options for those site recovery scenarios to really hum in Azure. And so, you know, they all sort of grow on top of each other, and they all end up sort of backing each other up in sort of building out this great experience. You know, one of the things with Azure that we're really trying to land is that we want it to feel, look, and be usable just like you would on premises,
right.
But then also add all this value that maybe you can't get on premises, things like the extension model, make it really easy to sort of deploy some things, the marketplace, make it really easy to get started. And so all they all kind of play out in sort of a really fluid way.
Now, does your team do anything with the new CPS, CVS?
Absolutely.
Can tie in?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
the way in which we work with them is we because it ends up being sort of the Azure experience and the Azure consistency model brought into that box that runs on premises, we end up working very closely with those guys to make sure they really are sort of the same look and feel, to make sure the experiences work, to make sure things like site recovery work. So we work very, very closely with those teams. It's one of the nice things about the product is those teams are so tightly intertwined because they're working on a common goal. You know, and we think that value really comes in by having that common goal be met between both the public, private, and hosted clouds, and sort of bring them all together in sort of that same experience. So,
nice. Yeah,
it's really fun. It's a great product. I'm looking forward to seeing sort of the feedback as it goes out the door, and just the Azure Pack in general is a great product as well. So, yeah.
I'm going to do a absolutely shameless plug at this point in time
for
an activity that we've got going on.
Yeah.
That's going to be taking place on December the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. So those of you that happen to be in North America, that is taking place just after Thanksgiving weekend or so, where we're going to have members of your team besides just you.
Yeah.
Although, you know, you could easily fill up the entire 4 days.
I can, but as you can tell by this session.
You delegated it out to some other members of your team. We're also going to have Mark Rusinovich there as well, doing a IaaS specifically targeting IT pros inside their environments.
4 days long.
4 days. Now, it's not full days because we are trying to be more mindful of people that are in different time zones.
Oh, I was going to be there all day.
Well, for yours,
I booked
extra time for you on day one.
That's how I get the juices really flowing.
So that's going to be taking place. We do not have a registration page just yet. Stay tuned to Channel 9, to the Edge Show and stuff that I do online to be able to find out when and where you can register for that free online stream of stuff. It's going to be taking place out of our lovely Building 20, I do believe.
That's first week of December, right?
First week of December.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be a lot of fun. You're going to be there as well as others.
My session will be the best, just FYI.
Okay.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Not that he has an ego or anything. He just likes to, you know, put a challenge to your team members.
You're probably right. Mark's will be better. Just because he's
good
so,
answer.
He's so ruggedly handsome. I don't... Anyway, we have a question. Shall we move to the question?
Yes, let's move to the question here.
This got awkward. We'll edit that, actually,
before we go
live.
Cut that part out.
Yeah.
How about PowerShell DSC as an alternative to templates and extensions in Azure? Maybe a repo containing a selection of standard configurations for, say, maybe SharePoint, Exchange, or WordPress, or whatever. See something like a DSC environment coming in for declarative configurations.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, totally. I think it's actually interesting. I should have clarified this.
This wasn't asked by Mr. Snover, was it?
Jeffrey asked this question? Is that Jeffrey out there?
He might have.
Jeffrey Snover, are you out there?
He might have. But go ahead, continue.
I'm sure he's milling about somewhere, hovering. Yeah, no, it's actually a fantastic question. It's actually worth pointing out the Octopus and the Visual Studio Release Manager extensions are actually built on DSC.
Right.
They're actually DSC-based extensions. So it's a very important point. We are excited to continue to sort of expand out DSC as well to be able to offer that type of solution to be able to run extensions directly on the virtual machines. And it's actually much easier to sort of get going when you've got that DSC baseline. We also do have a DSC extension that allows you to go in and plug in a DSC template and be able to launch it directly onto an Azure VM and be able to deploy it that way as well. And so you can use PowerShell, you can use DSC. Actually, DSC is being announced today. So right through the portal, you can go in and plug in a DSC template, and we'll actually cover that in the What's New in IaaS section. So gallery is a really good, interesting idea, sort of the repo of common selection for some of these things. Something that we'll definitely look at. I think it's a good idea to be able to have those built in. It may be sort of integrated a little bit as part of the automation story, right? You can imagine sort of Azure Automation having a similar story there, so something for us to go look at.
The voice in my ear has told me that we are out of time. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Sanders.
Now, thank you, sir.
Do you have a Channel 9 guy yet? There you go.
Huh.
One just for you, Channel 9 guy. Join us back here right after the break. We're going to be having, who's up next here? Azure Web App Proxy. Simon May is going to be back up again talking about some cool stuff right after the break.
What did you guys think of the episode? You're more than welcome to give us some feedback down below inside the comment area. You're more than welcome to do that there.
Yep.
You can also catch us on the Twitters. @TNEdge is the show's Twitter handle. Or you can reach me personally @RicksterCDN.
And you can get me @SciMonster. And of course, if you are tweeting us, don't forget to include the hashtag RicksMo. Rick's Mo, because Rick is partaking of the Movember Challenge.
Oh, yes, I forgot. The Movember Challenge, in case you're interested. I don't know if anyone's going to catch this one or not, but for some reason, I'm the only one on the team that's doing that this year for supporting Movember for men's health. So check out my webpage at mobro.co/RicksterCDN, and hey, possibly make a donation for men's health.
And all tweets, don't forget, Rick's Mo. Hashtag Rick's Mo.
I'll make sure that I give a picture of the mustache as it goes on the page, maybe even in the Edge as well.
Yep, we'll make sure we get that updated. Come back for the next episode next week.
See you then.